Welcome into Training Camp Report Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here, and we are joined by our special guest, Brian Hudspeth, college scout, area scout for the Buccaneers. So, Brian, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We call him HUD.
Just HUD. All those who call him friend call him HUD. So I know you guys changed your schedule a little bit this year as compared to last year. You guys were at training camp most of the time last year, but you guys have continued to travel around until recently. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, we actually went out. Usually we come in for the very first week of camp, which only entails just a couple of shorts practices just because of the acclimation period. So we decided to change it up this year to where we went out and hit our colleges first and hit our schools, mainly a lot of our big schools, and tried to go ahead and gather as much information as we could, hit those schools as they were reporting to camp, and then now we're here this week.
Well, our fans probably already know that you're the Southeast guy because you were nice enough to be with us on the show last year. So, obviously, the guy we want to ask you about is O.J. Howard. Just talk a little bit about your scouting process with him.
With O.J., obviously, O.J. is a kid that considered coming out after the 2015 season. He had a very good game in the national championship game in 16, and then made a very mature decision. He evaluated the process, went through the process, evaluated where he was as a player, made a decision to come back for a senior season at Alabama, and it was a good decision for him. He was able to get better as a blocker. He was able to kind of put it all together. They obviously had a change of quarterback and a little bit of change in offensive philosophy, so, you know, the opportunities weren't the same for him as far as catching the ball, but he was able to improve as a blocker, got better, and obviously was the best tight end in the draft, and we were fortunate that he fell to us.
How hard is it to find, I guess you'd call it, that true Y guy that can play every down, blocks, and is a threat downfield?
Very, very hard in college football these days because college football's changed so much.
Yeah.
It's gone to the spread. A lot of teams run a lot of the wide open concepts, so they don't use a tight end a lot, especially one that's attached in line, like you're saying, a Y tight end that actually blocks at the point of attack. So a lot of times we're projecting a lot to try to find that guy. So when you have a guy like OJ who's actually done it and you can see him doing it on tape, it's a lot easier. You get comfortable with him a lot quicker, and he does have those traits to do it.
When there are guys that you have evaluated and really said this guy's going to be something special, do you tend to get a little nervous then when you watch them later to make sure that they actually do that? You want them to prove you right?
Right, yeah, obviously. You know, we always fight for guys, and we always want our guys to succeed.
Yeah.
But you also want to make sure that those guys succeed. Unfortunately, I've had some guys here recently that haven't succeeded. So, you know, you always want your guys to succeed. You always want them to succeed for the Bucs, number one.
Yeah.
But it does make you proud, almost like a proud parent, to have one of your guys actually make it.
Speaking of nerves, we heard how the room was on draft night on the first round when OJ was still available a lot longer than a lot expected. We know how some of those people, how'd you feel about it? Were you nervous while that was going on?
You know, I honestly didn't think he would be there at that point.
So weren't nervous.
I wasn't really nervous until about two picks away.
Right.
And then you really, when it started becoming a reality, that's whenever you really were excited about the chance to get a player like OJ that really could help us add to what we've got going on here, really help Jameis and the offense.
That's awesome. And who are some of the other guys that you scouted that we have, whether it's undrafted guys or new guys this year?
Well, I cross-checked Beckwith, so I was familiar with him. Obviously, he was a good player at LSU. You know, he had some position versatility. Unfortunately, they got hurt at the end of the season, and he kind of missed some of the summer stuff here. So, you know, but it's really good to see him performing now. He's done really well in camp. He's playing two positions, and, you know, he's got a chance to really help us.
Maybe it was actually fortunate for us that he got hurt.
Yeah, more than likely we'll probably start for him.
When a guy does have an injury that's a pretty serious one, how does that factor into your evaluations of how comfortable you feel saying, I think that we should still take him, I think he'll be ready, I think he'll come back from it well? How do you decide that, and is it different for different players?
Well, as scouts, we're always told not to play doctor. So we evaluate the talent, we evaluate the character. We turn the medical stuff over to our trainers and our medical staff, and those guys put the medical grade on them, and they're the ones that project long-term implications from a health standpoint, and they put a medical grade on them. So we don't get involved with that. It's not supposed to affect my opinion of the player and his ability to play football and what his role would be for us.
Speaking of undrafted free agents, I'm not sure everybody knows the process by how that happens. It's kind of a free-for-all as soon as that last pick of the draft is made, right?
Right.
I know you and other scouts and coaches are all making calls. How's that broken up? Is it who you scouted or by position or what?
We break it up by position, and each scout's assigned a position, really and truly kind of starting more around the combine and the all-star games, and we kind of start thinking about, you know, guys that could potentially maybe be drafted late or maybe fall through the draft. And you start trying to develop relationships with kids, and kind of like college recruiting, you want to try to develop a relationship with them, develop a rapport with them. A lot of times we'll bring some of those kids in on a pre-draft visit, you know, not knowing if they're kind of on the bubble. Maybe they get drafted, maybe they don't, so that you have a little bit of rapport with them.
That makes
sense. So then we get our coaches involved also, and then once the draft's over with, we start talking to the agent, start talking to the kid, and you hope that on some kids you develop enough relationship that they are more than willing to come here for the opportunity to play.
So when you're on the phone with them, I'm sure that's important, a guy you've had a relationship with. What is, though, maybe like the biggest factor that convinces them? Is it just, can you tell them, look at our roster, there's real opportunities here? I mean, what do they tend to turn on?
Well, some kids you can sell the opportunity to, and, uh-huh. and they want a chance to compete. Some kids want as much money as they
the
can
biggest
get.
Money
and
some
and the agent, obviously, you know, a lot of times they want to try to find the best scenario for them to make the team, but the money is an important factor also. And a lot of times you get into bidding wars with other teams. It's guys you think that you're going to get, and maybe they tell you 1 minute that they're coming, and then 15 minutes later they've taken another offer somewhere else. So
that's understandable.
It's the nature of the business at the end. But it's tough to get get everybody in the boat at one time. And like you said, it is a free for all at the end.
Being in the southeastern area, how do you feel like that is specifically the things about that area that you scout as compared to some of the other areas of the country, of what type of guys come out of there, or what the unique things are that you get a chance to see there as compared to if you were in a different area?
Well, a lot of the guys in the southeast are, you know, obviously the SEC is very competitive. The ACC is very competitive. Not that the other conferences aren't, but there are a lot of players at the schools that I go to that could be backups at their current university that still have a chance to play in the NFL.
Wow.
Javian Elliott is a good example.
Yeah.
Javian was an undrafted free agent for us last year. He wasn't even starting until about halfway through his senior year.
Yeah.
Former walk-on, earned a scholarship. I wasn't even really aware of him until my second visit through Florida State. And I was like, well, who is this kid? They gave me his name. And so I started evaluating him at that point. You know, he made some plays. We kind of kept him on our radar. He ends up coming in on a free agent visit or free agent tryout. We signed him, and now he started for us. So a lot of times the backups at the schools I go to have as much potential as some players, some starters in other places.
Incredible.
Javian really is an incredible story.
Right.
I mean, like you said, he was a walk-on there. He didn't really even play till his senior year. I mean, can you even have imagined the first time you watched him that he'd be a starting nickelback in the NFL?
Right. Well,
Well,
you start evaluating, you immediately, the things you're drawn to about guys like him is their competitiveness.
Okay.
You know, and Javian's not the biggest guy, so he played with a little bit of chip on his shoulder.
Okay.
And that's a good thing, especially for the position. He played with confidence, and he did everything the right way off the field. He worked hard. Uh-huh. He was intelligent. He put in time in the film room. He did all the things that you want him to do to be a good football player. And he got his opportunities, and he seized those. And he continued to grind, and he continued to get better. And so the rest is history. He's here now. He's still competing. He's competing for a roster spot now. And
does any of that apply to a guy like Richie Brown? I think that's the guy you managed to sign.
Richie obviously was a scholarship athlete at Mississippi State. Started a lot of games at Mississippi State. Same thing. Very competitive. He's smart. He's a leader. You know, they kind of changed defenses in his senior year. So, you know, there was some learning going on for the entire unit there last year. But Richie was a guy that tested well at Pro Day, ran well enough. He's smart. He's intelligent. He's very mature. He's married. He's, you know, very stable, you know, home life. And so Richie's a guy that's done some good things in camp. He's been good on special teams. You know, he's athletic in coverage. He can run. He can move. So, you know, he's competing. There's
Sounds
a
like
battle
a good,
there.
It's a good scouting report.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah, this is pretty great. And how about Corin Kervin is another O-lineman out of Alabama. What about him, and what did you see that made you guys want to bring him
in? A great example of a backup at a university that actually is in NFL camp and competing. Corin was a guy that he was intelligent enough to play any of the positions on the O-line. Unfortunately, at Alabama, unfortunately for him, unfortunate for them, but unfortunate for him, there's a lot of good players in front of him.
Sure.
So he waited his time, and he was trying to get on the field. He was their sixth man. He played guard and tackle. So he's a good example of a guy that wasn't even starting in Alabama, but we tracked him, we evaluated him, and we saw something in him. Big guy, big body, long arms, can play multiple positions. So you bring him to camp, and you want him just to compete and see what happens.
That's awesome. I love those scouting reports. Well, Hud, thanks so much for being on with us.
You.
We really appreciate it. We still have two more segments coming up. One is getting to your Twitter questions. Use that hashtag BucksLive, and we'll be right back. Welcome back into Training Camp Report Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We just had Brian Hudspeth on. If you missed it in the first segment, one of our college area scouts. Man, he had some awesome insight, especially about how some of these schools are so good in college. Yeah. Backups can contribute.
We ran out of time there because I got in another 10 minutes with HUD, and I actually wanted to follow up a little bit on that Corin Kervin stuff. And if you didn't see it, he was talking about how he's an NFL caliber talent, but he couldn't get a starting spot at Alabama because they're just
crazy.
So dang loaded. But it made me, I wanted to ask him about, does that mean when you bring a guy like that in here, you expect, I think we just had a big play behind us.
Yeah, whenever you
Cam Bray.
Cam Bray with a big play.
Do you expect to have to be more patient with him? Because presumably with less developmental time in games in college, he should be a little bit behind.
Right.
And you should... They probably, I wonder if they're looking more for just, does he have that talent? Not, is he ready to play right now?
And yeah, does he maybe, have the potential?
Yeah, maybe if he doesn't make the 53, he's a prime guy you want in your practice squad, because another name for the practice squad is the developmental squad.
Right.
And that's half of what that thing is for.
That's really interesting. And we were, in general, we also wanted to remind everybody to keep sending in those Twitter questions. Use that hashtag BucksLive. We'll get to that in the final segment. We only have today and tomorrow for our live shows for training camp. Because then after that, it's not really training camp. It's already technically not.
Right.
It's a little bit different.
It's kind of extended training camp.
It's an extended training camp right now, but that's the end of the open practices. So today and tomorrow are the final days of that. And we also want to hear everybody's thoughts on Hard Knocks last night, which we're going to be sharing later as well.
Which
but I know.
Which was awesome.
Which it was awesome. But before we even get to that, I know we were talking about Corin Kervin already. Wanted to talk a little bit about the O-line and some of the things that we've seen recently.
You know, we were talking about different combinations and how that great veteran depth with guys like Evan Smith and Joe Holly and the versatility of a guy like Kevin Panfil gives you so many options. And we talked about, you know, maybe a guy like Evan Smith playing guard, or maybe even Pett moving back to guard and Joe Holly coming in. And from the sound of Dirk Cutter talking about it, we were conjecturing that probably their favorite move was not going to be moving Alley. They like how that's going. And I think in the last 2 days of practice with J.R. Sweezy getting a little time off, and Kevin Pample moving out to right tackle because DeMar Dotson's not playing right now. Instead of, that's with both guards that you would normally be starting not there. Allie's still playing center, and they have Joe Holly and Evan Smith playing guard right now. I think in the long run, Joe Holly's, they feel his best spot is center, and he doesn't have quite the experience at guard as Evan Smith does, but he's a talented offensive lineman, and he can do it. And that's what they're doing right now. They were just doing the first full team period, and the offensive line for the first team was Allie still at center and Joe Holly and Evan Smith at guard. So those are the little hints you get that tell you an idea of what's their first option. You know, they've got these other options, but this is what they would do first.
And it's what we've talked about all year of how many amazing options there are, and it's going to end up being a problem in some ways to make these decisions, and it's a great problem to have.
And another problem that's going to be tough to have, it's the proverbial good problem, is how many offensive linemen are they going to keep on the 53? The number's usually either 8 or 9, and that those last few spots are going to be tough. I mean, they obviously like Leonard Westerall. They kept him all last year. Caleb Bidenock, the draft pick that is good because he's got that really versatility to play all over the line, and they've been focusing on tackle this year. But a guy that Coach Cutter has brought up twice, almost unsolicited in recent days, is Mike Liebke. And he's a guy that was with us towards the end of last year and hasn't really had a lot of NFL experience yet. But, you know, if he's forcing his way into the picture, that's going to make that 53-man cut even harder for those guys. But, again, good problem to have.
That's true. And I think this game will be really interesting in particular to watch the O-line as they finally are out there a little bit longer and get more in the flow of things, maybe try and get the running game going as well a little bit. I know that's something they've really been focusing on that seemed like it was improving.
It was
sure.
good in Jacksonville, and I think they've been pretty happy with the run blocking of most of those offensive linemen so far. So that's a good sign. Now, we'll be a little mixed up. It does look to me like Kevin Panfil will probably be playing right tackle. We know DeMar's not going to play, but he's going to be fine for the regular season. But we know he's not going to play, and so I think you're going to see Panfil there, which almost certainly means Evan Smith at left guard. Mm-hmm. And then we'll see about J.R. Sweezy. It looks like a second day he's getting some rest.
Right.
Said it was just a rest day. So if he's in there, fine. If not, I guess you could see Joe Holly.
Well, and I do think it is interesting to point out that, yes, the guys are talented enough to move around, especially maybe the left to right guard positions, But I remember last year actually on the radio show with Donovan and Allie that they were really explaining that that's not as easy as people tend to think it is.
Sure.
Because you get so used to the direction you start, like you how you're lined up, how you come up, which leg is front and which is back and everything, that you have to mirror image everything. And it actually is a little bit harder than people realize.
I was going to say it'd be funny to see one of them switch sides and come flying out of their stance in the
wrong direction.
But
yeah.
Since it would probably get the quarterback killed, that probably
Yeah, let's not try that one. That's true. All right, Hard Knocks last night.
That was awesome.
Tell me some of your favorite moments and thoughts.
Well, to me, there was a lot of funny stuff, and obviously they're starting to realize there's some stars on this team, like the obvious ones like Jameis and Doug Martin, but also Ali Marpet.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing him blocking guys in Jacksonville was cool. But I think, to me, the best storyline maybe of the whole season so far was the Maurice Fleming stuff, because really that's what Hard Knocks gives you that you can't get. Nobody would have ever known that Maurice mm-hmm. Fleming story. We would have seen him make a nice play at the end of that game, and then a few days later we'd have seen the transaction. Maurice Fleming waived injured. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have known the story that he got hurt. Probably would have come out and said, this is a guy, he finally gets in the fourth quarter and this is his chance. He doesn't want to come out.
Yeah.
He wants to show what he can do. And, you know, he's playing hurt enough that he slips at the line of scrimmage on the next shot. But then he makes that amazing play to break up what would have been the winning touchdown pass mm-hmm. from Jacksonville. And I remember at the time going, oh, good play for Maurice Fleming. No idea.
No
he's
idea.
Running around on one leg.
So
and
true.
Then the very next day, the MRI and the x-ray show that he's got an injury that's going to, as I said in the show, it's going to keep him out at least a month. So they do the wave injury thing, and you never would have known that back in part of the story. Nobody ever talks about that.
And I did love how much it humanized what these guys go through. That is their dream, and what they will put themselves through to make it happen. I think that that's always a great thing to keep in mind when everyone starts angry tweeting about players making mistakes or things that, you know.
Or not getting back from injuries.
Right, just the way that people talk about athletes, I think this is such a great reminder they are, you know, that the humanizing part of it, of the how challenging this is mentally, emotionally, physically, all of it. I thought that was a really great storyline.
And I'll tell you what, their teammates know it. You see Brent Grimes tell them fight to the end, and you see Robert McClain give him a pat on the back, and you'll get through this, and all kinds of support. And I'll tell you, Maurice Fleming, I'm sure, is going to try again. It could be here. It could be somewhere else. I don't think he's done trying the NFL. And whichever team signs him next, they're not going to have to worry about his toughness. They're going to have seen the Hard Knocks and go, that's one tough dude.
It's quite a scouting report on him right there. That's very true. All right, we still have one more segment coming up. We're going to get to your Twitter questions. Use that hashtag BucksLive. We also want to hear all of your favorite parts of Hard Knocks. We're going to continue talking about some of ours in the next segment as well. So send those in after our quick break. We'll get right back to that. Welcome back into Training Camp Report Live, presented by Miller Lite. Casey Phillips and Scott Smith here. We're about to get to some of your Twitter questions, thoughts, and comments. You can keep sending those in throughout the segment. Use that hashtag BucksLive, and don't forget to send in some of your thoughts on Hard Knocks as well. Doesn't have to be questions. We just want to hear everybody else's favorite parts. So I know we talked a little bit about that Maurice Fleming little story arc. Were there any other moments that you particularly enjoyed?
Well, Chris Baker was kind of a...
That man
funny, huh?
Is so funny.
That was quite a dance he put on that palm tree.
First of all, I laughed so hard when he, in practice, called him and Channing Ward belly buddies.
That was amazing.
That cracked me up. And I heard someone say that they thought that might be the new nickname for the entire D-line.
Oh, my goodness.
And I thought that was hysterical.
Well, I guess if you can put that belly to good use.
Yes.
You know, it's
worth
highlighting.
Use it to move the other people out of the way.
They are strong people. He looked good. I'll tell you what, we were there in Jacksonville, and you couldn't watch everything, as Coach Cutter made a point of saying, because there's basically two whole practices going on at once. But I know I watched one day, I watched our D-line against their O-line, and, you know, when you watch it out here, it's kind of, well, did our one guy do great or did the other guy struggle? But you knew what you wanted there, and our D-line was dominating in that drill, dominating.
That's true, yeah.
And then Hard Knocks clearly saw that. I'm glad they highlighted that.
Yeah, I thought last night's episode was a great mixture of the football and the personality that they showed. Some great stuff from those practices and games and the Maurice Fleming stuff. And then you also had Chris Baker being so funny, and you saw, you know, Gerald eating the hot dog at the game and giving him half and calling him fat. And,
you know,
just like so many funny things like that. And the fact that Gerald gets those food trucks for the guys every year, which
they
obviously love. Like, the way to a football player's heart, obviously, is through free food.
Yes, and as we're talking about Gerald's largesse, we should point out that he invited all the staff there, too. So he was not just providing for his teammates.
Which
coaches,
is awesome.
Staff, which we obviously appreciated
awesome
very much.
Awesome for him,
You know, I forgot what I was going to say.
All right. Well, we have a bunch of questions anyways we need to get to. Oliver, who tweets to us occasionally, and I love this, he's from Austria. He wants to know how the Allen Cross-Luke Stocker tight end battle is going. And he says he doesn't think that we will keep four tight ends. I know you tend to disagree with that.
I completely disagree, and I think it's possible we keep five.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of came into this camp thinking, obviously, O.J. Howard and Cam Brate are safe, and I think Luke Stocker's safe. One, I think this is something that maybe Roy Cummings pointed out when he was on the show with us. Luke Stocker is a great presence for those guys because that's a young room otherwise, and he's one of the longest-tenured players here, and they always, when you interview one of those other guys, they always talk about what a great influence he is on them. And he's a great blocker. You can do a lot with him in that regard, and I think we're going to use a lot of two tight end sets, and it's not always going to be Howard and Brate. Now, Allen Cross, we love the guy, and he has such a great attitude, and he overcame the odds and made it last year, and I think he's viewing this camp the same way, almost as if he's an undrafted free agent again. He's certainly not considering himself a lock, but he's played well. I mean, Coach Cutter brought him up. I think he's looked really good. And you can do different things with these different guys. They're different type of tight ends. So I would think that those four guys are a real good bet. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if we also kept a guy like Anthony O'Clair, just because we see the potential there. And we're afraid he'll get signed away.
That's true. All right. Drew says that he hasn't heard much about J.J. Wilcox and Justin Evans. So I know we've talked about how it looks like Conti and Tandy, as of now, have the starting job locked up. But, you know, I think some people are maybe wondering how close it is between them in the next tier, or how those two have looked in their development.
Well, actually, maybe we haven't talked about it a lot, but it has come up here a lot in post-practice interviews with Coach Cutter, and the story really hasn't changed much. You got to rewind to the offseason and the OTAs, and both JJ and Justin had injuries they were overcoming, and they really got very little practice time during OTAs. I'm pretty sure JJ was in the mini camp at the end, but still, he was, in terms of the amount of time they got in the defense, it was way behind Chris Conte and Keith Tandy, who, by the way, already had a whole year in that defense.
Mm-hmm.
So necessarily those two guys came into camp with an experience gap and were behind Conte and Tandy. Now, they could have closed that. The problem is, and it's not actually a problem, it's a good thing for the Buccaneers, is that Conte and Tandy have done nothing wrong to let them close that gap. They've been very good. Coach has praised their efforts quite a bit. I think Chris Conte is a guy that maybe is playing a lot better than our fans realize. And I think everybody loves Keith Tandy after the way he finished last year. And to those guys' credit, they started this camp as starters, and they haven't relented.
Yeah, that's
really, it's just awesome depth. I think before the course of this year, you'll see all four of those guys get some defensive snaps, though.
Okay. Miss Giggles says, any truth to the rumor that the Bucs are looking at running back LeSean McCoy in a possible trade?
I just heard that one yesterday. I was reacting like, what?
I think that's one of those things that just somebody, you know, in this day and age with Twitter and all these other ways of rapidly disseminating information, and not just information, but opinions and hot takes, that things can rapidly progress from one guy saying, this could happen, just maybe he heard something, or maybe he's just conjecturing because it looks like the Bills, they traded Watkins, maybe he thinks they're going to, you know, tank and try to get rid of their best players and rise back up. But I think that came out of nowhere. I don't think there's anything to that at all, particularly because the Bills have pretty much said there's nothing to that.
Right.
Not specifically the Bucks, just that they wouldn't trade. That's okay. The reports coming out of Buffalo, that they're not even remotely considering trading.
Which, you know, makes
sense.
No,
I don't think there's anything to that.
Okay, Toby says, last night on Hard Knocks, it showed the director of security playing the piano. Do you guys have any hidden talents?
I can juggle.
That's true. I have witnessed that.
I can juggle. I can sometimes throw it behind my back and catch it, but not all the time. I can do the regular juggle and then the cascading type of juggling. So that would be mine, but I would never try to do it on camera.
Yeah, I was going to say, I like, guess what's happening like tomorrow morning? We're going to bring some tennis balls out here.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny. I don't have hidden talents like even outward, just people knowing about talents.
You got a pretty good
talents.
Jump shot, I'm guessing, from the basketball.
There we go. Then. We'll go with that. I can
it is
beat
not...
somebody at pop a shot really, really well.
I can rap most of Dr. Dre, The Chronic.
That's true. Rapping would probably be your hidden talent.
Yeah. I can't do it.
No acapella rapping for you. That's pretty funny. All right. Doug wants to know, he said, question for Casey, any word on season 2 of the Ally and Donovan show? I've had a lot of people ask me this.
Yes.
And I've had to just ignore it because I wasn't allowed to say anything yet. Unfortunately, the Ally and Donovan show is no more. It's tragic. Oh. It's not because nobody wanted it back, but we've just changed
the format of
all the different radio shows this year. So there are going to be a couple different shows. There's going to be a coach's show, and then there's going to be a rotating player show, which I guarantee Ally and Donovan will come on at least 1 week, probably
will
more
it be
than
with
that.
You?
Yes,
okay.
It will be with me, and that is why I can guarantee that they will be on for at least one episode
them.
Because I will be the one.
You'll probably
ask them
in week
one,
and then you'll be in like week five, and like, can I ask them again?
Yeah,
too
I think
soon?
We'll do it again. We're just gonna have a every third or fourth week. We'll just bring them back on. Be like, no, Jameis, we don't need to talk about you. We'll bring
that?
Them on. That's so funny. I love it. All right, well, that's gonna do it for us today on this edition of Training Camp Report Live, presented by Miller Lite. We're gonna be back tomorrow morning for our final show of training camp. So this is it—the last time to get in all those training camp preseason type questions. We're gonna go back to our normal show format, back in the studio without all of the awesome players
like
behind us
here.
And everything. I know it's great. I wish we had practice like
this.
We could always do
right
it with.
There.
Yeah, the fan is helpful. So yeah, get all those questions into us before our show tomorrow. So that's gonna do it for us. We'll see you then.